Hey, we're holding at the top of Samachayim Rabbah. Yesterday's Gemara had mentioned and been talking about the concept of Nerla, that you can't use something that came about unexpectedly as a basis for being Matir Neder. And in that connection, the Gemara had talked about that Rabbi Eliezer, on the other hand, holds you can. Why? Because we see that such a thing was used to be Matir Moshe's Neder to stay in Midian. So he had to stay in Midian out of fear of Dasan and Aviram, who had Matir on him. Now all of a sudden they're poor, or it says they died, and Rabbi Eliezer takes that literally that they actually died, and death is Nola, and therefore we see that Nola is fine, whereas the Chachamim counter that no, it doesn't mean they died, it just means they became poor. And becoming poor is not so much Nola. Davul is a chodah of Olam, it's a more respectable thing that people will become poor. So,
Kemet.
It's Kemet. It's one of the four that's Kemet, but yeah, it's still, Misa, obviously, eventually everybody dies, but it's not necessarily that they're going to die in a certain time frame, whereas on the earth, it's something more common. God will suppose about them. In 1 second, a person can lose their whole fortune. Okay, so now the Gemara continues on that topic, talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's Shavua. And by the way, we talked about briefly earlier in the Masechta that Rebbe points out in a few places. A vote from the Rogachover. We learned earlier in the Masechta about a person who makes a neder like the neder of Moshe Rabbeinu, or like the Shavuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, actually. And we said that's considered a valid neder, even though we're saying in our Gemara over here that Moshe was Matir Neder, so therefore, on the face of it, that neder no longer exists. But because the Torah records it, that gives it a certain permanence, even though in actual historical fact it was eventually canceled.
I was thinking about it. We said initially that a neder for Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't work, but Moshe's neder was for Kaddish Baruch Hu.
What do you mean for Kaddish Baruch
Hu? I mean, it was in the presence of Kaddish Baruch
Hu. No, but we're not talking about what the Mishnah had said yesterday is you can't use covered hamakom as a basis for canceling a neder. You can't say if you knew that by making this neder you're dishonoring the Eibishter, would you have made the neder? You can't do that because how does a person have a chutzpah to say I would have gone and dishonored the Eibishter? So then you're, as the Gemara said yesterday, and you're done in Torin Yoka, that a neder is not going to, proper hatara is not going to be done because the person is going to say, yeah, you know that's true, I wouldn't have, even though really he didn't make it that. Yeah. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanya, Hamudu Hanah Mechaveri, if somebody makes a neder of Hanah from somebody else, in material El Bafanav. So you're only allowed to be matir that neder in that person's presence. And Mefoshim discussed, does it actually mean in his presence, or does it just mean with his knowledge? But anyway, Menani Mili, how do we know that? Amar Rav Nachman, Dichtiv, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe b'Midyan, the Eibishter says to Moshe in Midyan, Leich Shuv Mitzrayim, go return to Mitzrayim actually, Ki Meisu Kol HaNoshim, because all the people that you're afraid of are dead, poor, as we said yesterday. So what is that? What does it need to mention? Late? What does the pasuk have to say? Go to Midian, and also what does Bechlal? What does that have to say that the Eibishter told him was in Midian? Mechora, he was in Midian already. It means Amalei, the Eibishter is telling him, Midian Nadarta, you made this neder originally 2 years in Midian. Therefore, Leich Mahatir Nidu Chabu Midian. So you have to go back to Midian and be master it so that Yisrei knows about it.
Is this actually what the Eibishter said to Moshe?
This is what we're deriving. We're inferring that from the expression of the pasuk. The Eibishter tells him that the Midian, he tells him in Midian, Leich Shuv Mitzrayim. Right, that also, yeah. Exactly, that's the point. The Eibishter is telling him, Leich, go first the Midian. As a matter of fact, there are some Mefarshim who explain that you can also parse the words of the Pasuk, brought in Mamloyed, that you can also parse it as if it said, the Midian Leich, and then Shuv Mitzrayim. So first, go to Midian, be Matir your neder, then return to Mitzrayim and accomplish what you're supposed to be doing over there. And how do we know that Moshe made a shavua in the first place? Vayoyel Moshe, because it says that Moshe, now the simple meaning of Vayoyel would be that Moshe agreed. Vayoyel Moshe, L'Hashem as Ish, Moshe agreed or decided to stay with Yisrael. But the Gemara is explaining, Ein Ola Ela Shavua. The word Ola over here actually means shavua. And before we get to that, what Taka forces us to say that here it means a Shavua, for one thing, the Mizrahi points out on Chumash, because otherwise the two halves of the pasuk don't really fit well together. And what does it say? Vayoyel Moshe L'Hashem as Ish, Moshe agreed, if we say it means agreed, he agreed to stay with Yisrael. Vayitin Lo Yisrael Bita, and then Yisrael gave him his daughter Tzipora. What's the connection between the two halves, necessarily? But if you say that it means that Moshe swore to Yisrael that, fine, I'm not going to go back to Mitzrayim because it's dangerous, okay, well then, fine, in that case, then you're going to be settling over here. In that case, on that basis, I'm willing to have you marry my daughter, yeah. And there is a bit of discussion, which also goes with the next piece of Gemara over here. Are we talking about, when we say Amudah, this case of Amudah Anam HaVeda in Matur and Layel B'Fanav, is it across the board, any time that you're making a neder based on the das of somebody else, that you can't be matur it except with that person's das? Or is it maybe only, Tosis mentioned briefly, according to Rabbeinu Tam, maybe it's only if the other person did you a favor, like in this case over here of Yisro, who did a favor to Moshe and let him stay with him.
So what's the answer?
So different opinions. In Shulchan Aruch, I think it passed him according to the opinion that it's not only if the person did you a favor. But now, Dichtiv, and how do we know? Here's another example where Allah means the Shvur. Dichtiv by Yovei Oisa Ba'Allah. It says when Nebuchadnezzar made Tzitziyahu king. So the history over there in brief is after Yoshiyahu was killed in battle. We mentioned it in the Kinnis on Nam Tisha B'Av. There was a whole Kinna about it. So first his son Yehoyachaz was appointed the next king by Pari Nechai, the same Pari who killed Yoshiyahu. He lasted only a couple of months, I don't remember if Pari made him king, the people made him king, and then Pari came after 3 months and deposed him, and set up his brother, whose original name was Eliakim, but he renamed him Yehoyachim, as the next king. A couple of years later, Nebuchadnezzar comes to the throne, and Babel all of a sudden becomes this great world power. So Yehoyachim ends up becoming a vassal of Babel. And after a few years later, he rebels, and Nebuchadnezzar comes and attacks Yerushalayim and takes Yeshayahu in chains and then takes him starts schlepping him to Babel, and Yehoyachim dies on the way.
Why did he rebel?
Because he was a Rosh in general. I mean, the Nevi'im, all the Nevi'im of that time, Yirmiyahu especially, were warning him, don't, you know, they should put Nebuchadnezzar in charge, don't rebel against him. But anyway, so Nebuchadnezzar sets up Yehoyachim's son Yehoyachim as the king. Then his advisors tell him, you know what, that's a lousy idea. If his father rebelled against you, the son is probably not any better. So he came after 3 months and deposed him. He came after 3 months and deposed him and took Yahyachim's uncle. So this is another brother. He had three brothers. Or they actually had four, it says in Yibra'i. I remember three for our purposes. You had first there was Yahyachim, Yahyachim, and now the third brother, Tzitziyahu, becomes the next king. So Nebuchadnezzar set him up as king. And set Tzitziyahu up as king. And the prophet says, Vayavei Oisa Ba'Allah. He brought him into an oath. What was the oath? We're going to get to in a minute. So we see there's an example where the word Allah means an oath, a vow. Marashah points out, I mean, the Gemara could have pointed out any number of places in Tanakh where the word Allah means an oath. It chose this one because the Gemara wants to get into the serious consequences that happen from Tzitziyahu breaking his shvur. So what happened? The Pasuk says, "V'gam Melech Nebuchadnezzar Morad." He also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar. The brother of Yehoyachin, yeah. Uh-huh. So his brother, Yehoyachin, had previously rebelled. Yeah, he made the same mistake, basically. Let's learn what happened. The difference is, Yehoyachin was a Rasha. Tzitziyahu, though, the Gemara mentioned in a few places, was a Tzaddik. He himself, the Pasuk actually calls him a Rasha in a couple of places because he didn't prevent the people from doing wrong. We find throughout the Nevi'im Achronim that the people were doing all kinds of Averis and harassing and almost killing Yirmiyahu, and Tzitziyahu didn't stop them.
So, he knew about it,
but he felt he's too weak to be able to oppose them, whatever. Anyway, so the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim there lists a couple of things that Tzitziyahu did wrong. One of them is V'gamba Melech Nebuchadnezzar Morad, that he also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, Asher Shviyei Belekim Chaim, that he made him swear in the name of Hashem. Now, the simple meaning, if you just learned it without having that, if you didn't have the Gemara that we're going to tell, the story that we're going to tell over here, you would think it's just Nebuchadnezzar made him promise that he'll be a loyal subject, that he's not going to rebel against him. But the Gemara explains there was a different Shavuah involved over here. Because Taka, if it was only that, then Sidkiyahu would have known that Taka, you don't break to the Shigur. There's no reason to rebel. Unlike his brother, Yahyakim, who was a Rosh, Sidkiyahu was a Tzaddik, and he would know better. But this was a different Shigur. What happened? My Magdur say, so how did, in what way did Sidkiyahu rebel? Ashkechei Tzidkiyahu l'Nebuchadnezzar to have a ka'ochel al Nebuchaya. Tzidkiyahu one time found Nebuchadnezzar who was eating a rabbit chai. And there's two possible meanings of chai. Chai can either mean raw, as in not cooked, so it was dead but raw, right. Or alive. Yeah, they tore off a limb from it. Either way, it's an achzorius thing to do. It's a disgusting thing to do. Amalei, so Nebuchadnezzar was very embarrassed. He says to him, Ishtabali, delay magli flavoi. Swear to me that you're not going to tell on me, v'loi tepuk milsa, and that this matter isn't going to get out from between the two of us. Ishtaba, so Tzidkiyahu swore. L'soi, hava come it starts. Tzidkiyahu begufi. Later on, Tzidkiyahu felt very bad about it. He's like having great sire. Like, I have this juicy information about Nebuchadnezzar, and I'm not able to tell it. It's Joshua. So he went to the Sanhedrin to be Matir Neder.
So that he didn't kill him.
Wait, we're gonna get to that's what the pasuk is saying, that he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, and that precipitated the war that ended with the Churban.
Yeah, without rebelling before that.
That's what we're talking about. The fact that he was Matir Neder, Nebuchadnezzar found out about it. Wait, that's what the Gemara is gonna tell up here. The Medrash, by the way, gives a little more detail than the Gemara is telling over here. The Medrash says like this: when Nebuchadnezzar first set up to deal with king. He realized how important a king from Malchus Beis David is. So he put him in charge of five other kings in the area, Moab, Ammon, Tsur, a couple of others. So you have Nebuchadnezzar as the emperor, under him is Tzidkiyahu, and under Tzidkiyahu are five kings from that part of the world. He was set up by Nebuchadnezzar. He was a Jewish king. He's a king. He's a king from Malchus Beis David. But Nebuchadnezzar is the one who appointed him as the king of Yehuda. This is 11 years before the first sermon. Nebuchadnezzar already at that point had been ruling over Israel for, what is it, 8 years.
Instead of conquering and having his soldiers be down the choke of all the people, he let the king, a Jewish king, be there to pay the tax.
Yeah, basically.
Right. Like Alexander the Great did.
Yeah, that's pretty fair comparison, yeah. Anyway. So the Medrash gives a little more detail over there that Tzidkiyahu, because of his high position of his, he's in charge of several other kings in the kingdom, so therefore he had free access to Nebuchadnezzar's palace anytime he wanted. So that's when he comes in one day and finds him eating this rabbit. Later on, what happens is one time Tzidkiyahu is sitting with these vassal kings, and they tell him, Hayitochen, that we all have to be subject to Nebuchadnezzar, this horrible, cruel guy. Better we should just be subject of yours. What do we have to all be under Nebuchadnezzar? And Tzidkiyahu tells them, and having been Matir Neder already, as the Gemara says over here, Tzidkiyahu tells them, you know what, you're right. I mean, Itake is a cruel guy. As a matter of fact, I once walked into the palace and saw him eating this live or raw rabbit. It's a low thing to do. A normal human being wouldn't do it. That's the point, in other words. So he felt to be Matir Neder. Wait. Okay. So he was Matir Neder Vomer, and then he told it. So like the Medrash told it over here, he told these five kings, and then word got out. Wait. That's what the Gemara is pointing out, yeah. Shamon Nebuchadnezzar to come of Azin Leis, and Nebuchadnezzar heard everybody's making fun of him. Shalach Ba'aiti Sanhedrin, the Tzidkiyahu. So he came, and so he sent for the Sanhedrin, as well as Tzidkiyahu. Amalai, and he says to them, Chazis and Micah of Tzidkiyahu. Look what Tzidkiyahu did. You guys are the Congress. You guys are the Parliament, like a very Israel. You're supposed to make sure that Tzidkiyahu does the right thing. Lab Hachi Ishtaba Bishma Dishmaya Deloy Maglina. Didn't he swear in the name of the Eivishter that he's not going to tell? Amalei, so Tzidkiyahu says, Ichli Yashvuasa. I was Matir Neder.
Without the king's authorization.
Yeah, well, that's the point. That's what the Gemara is bringing it in over here. Amalei, so Nebuchadnezzar says, what, Mr. He turns to the Sanhedrin, Michelin Ashwasa? Are you really, is there such a thing as being Matir Neder? Remember, Nebuchadnezzar's a guy. He doesn't know what it says in the Torah. He didn't know the concept that you can do a Torah and Darim. Is there such a thing as being Matir Neder? Amalei, so the Sanhedrin told him yes. Amalehu, so he asked him, Bafana, or Yafila Shloi Bafana? Fine, but if you're making a Neder or a Shavua on somebody else's das, can he be master it only in that person's presence with their knowledge or even not? I'm really befun of. So they tell him it has to talk to be in his presence, like the Gemara says at the beginning of the Amud. Amalahoin ba'atun mayab ditun. So he says, no, so why did you do what you did? my time alay am written l'tzidkiyahu. Why did you tell Tzidkiyahu that's wrong? We can't be matu neder without Nebuchadnezzar's permission. Miyad, immediately, what happened? The pasuk says in Eicha, Yesh v'la'aret yidmu ziknei bas tzion. They sit on the ground and are quiet, the elders of tzion, meaning Sanhedrin. Now, so Marsha says, actually, if the pasuk is just describing, like, after the Churban, everybody's stunned and everybody's sitting on the ground quietly, then the Lashon should be in past tense. Yoshvu la'aret damu ziknei bas tzion. Yeshvu and yidmu are more like imperatives. They shall sit on the ground. They shall be quiet. So this implies the pasuk is actually describing a zera that Nebuchadnezzar did. It means that they pulled out the cushions from underneath them. So again, the Medrash gives a little more detail over here. When the Sanhedrin first came, there's the parliament, the congress of the Jewish people, so Nebuchadnezzar put them in an honorable seat. Then after this whole discussion, back and forth, he schlepped out the seats, and actually the Medrash goes further. He called in his servants and had them tie the hair of the Sanhedrin, the hair of each of the members of the Sanhedrin, to the tails of horses and drag them along the ground from Yerushalayim to Lud, and that killed them. So the Medrash says don't think Hataras Nedarim is such an easy thing. Look what a wrong Hataras Nedarim, look what it caused. So what taka happens? So why taka? If they themselves know the halacha that you can only be matur b'fanav, then why are they being matur shalai b'fanav? So there's a couple of possibilities. One way of looking at it is if we say that this whole concept of ein matirin la'ela b'fanav only applies to someone who did you a favor, then they may have felt, not necessarily, is that relevant over here? I mean, yes, Nebuchadnezzar appointed Tzidkiyahu king, but after all, I mean, look, you know, he is the next in line, kind of. I mean, Yehoyachin's gone, he doesn't have any sons, so therefore, you know, and it goes, the Malchus goes to Yerusha. So it's not like Nebuchadnezzar necessarily did Tzidkiyahu any particular favor that this halacha should be operative. So they may have felt that way. Also, a couple of them before him discussed over here, what about Tzidkiyahu himself? Shouldn't he have known better? And the vort is also that the right. So the vort is the vort is like this. The Sanhedrin may have figured that, you know what, it's true. Ordinarily, you can only be master b'fanav. Let's say that this din applies across the board, whether the person did you a favor or not. Or let's say even we consider that Nebuchadnezzar Taka did Tzidkiyahu a favor by appointing him king. Nevertheless, they may have figured that Ram says that for a dvar mitzvah, it's different. You can be master neder. In this case, if it's a dvar mitzvah, they could argue it was a dvar mitzvah because the thing is bothering and tormenting Tzidkiyahu so much that he's not able to do melechas shemayim. He's not able to concentrate on acting as on being a king, on doing what he's supposed to as king. Also, b'chlal, the general rule when a king tells you to do something, you're supposed to obey. So okay, I mean if it's also the drabbanon, then talking, you're not allowed to. But again, if they felt that it's a divine mitzvah, then they may have felt there's reason enough to. And some, one second, I'll tell you one other thing. I mean, some mafarshim actually say, as a matter of plain halacha, they may have been correct that they could be matur shalai b'fanav. But the mistake that they made in that case, the mistake that Tzidkiyahu made, and the mistake that they made in following him, is they didn't take into consideration the chil Hashem that's going to come from it. Sure. Yes, technically, maybe they could be matur this neder, but they didn't consider that, yeah, word of it is going to get back to Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to think that, you know, Jews don't keep their promises. So that alone is a big thing.
Two things here. The mission says, Nebuchadnezzar was not a chaver. Yeah.
No, but we're not talking. The point is, you make a neder to somebody else. You know, in the siddur before Taras Nazarim of Rosh Hashanah, there's a little note over there that says in Mavur B'Gemara Poskim that when you make a neder, the kind of neder you can be master in a Taras Nazarim is only Ben Adam LaMakim. A neder Ben Adam LaChaveira, whether it's a yid or a guy, you can't be master by a Taras Nazarim. That fits with what we're saying over here.
So maybe that's why our Gemara
doesn't mention the detail about him telling the goy is your king. This is not really important to the point the Gemara is trying to make over here. In the Medrash, it's important to mention the point because it led to the killing of the Sanhedrin and then the whole destruction of this temple.
What did
Nebuchadnezzar
do after that?
So that's what we say. You say in the Medrash over there, he killed out Sanhedrin, and afterwards he...
Who was the king then?
So this is still Tzidkiyahu.
Oh, he happened there.
No. So then once once all this happened, and Taka, that's when Nebuchadnezzar started the siege of Yerushalayim, that served the Tavis, that eventually led to the purple. I mean, I don't know if that was the only thing, but that was definitely a major factor involved.
Ezekiel was the only one left. He was the only one who actually walked back.
I don't understand.
He came with the...
No, No, as a matter of fact, actually, it may well be that the story that the Medrash is describing over there, how Nebuchadnezzar killed the Sanhedrin by tying them to the horses, etc., that may have been after the Korban. Because the Medrash meant... What happened? The Pasuk mentions that when Nebuchadnezzar came, when he sent his army to besiege Yerushalayim and eventually destroy it, he made his headquarters in a place called Rivla. It's someplace on the border of Eretz Israel nowadays in Syria, someplace in Syria. And the Medrash says that the Medrash calls that place Daphne Shalantuchia. So it says Nebuchadnezzar was holding court there in Daphne Shalantuchia when he had the Sanhedrin brought to him. So the vote would be, maybe the vote is, even after the Churban, he's still respected. I mean, okay, I destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, I'm taking everybody into Golus, but for the Sanhedrin, they're important people. Then when he found out how everything had developed over here, then already that's it. The Sanhedrin are goners, and Tzidkiyahu also, the Pasuk tells us over there that Nebuchadnezzar killed Tzidkiyahu's children in front of him and then blinded him and took him off to Babel. So no, it's not Tzidkiyahu didn't get away from it safely.
In the end, he was
in jail for many years in Babel. But then he was still alive when Nebuchadnezzar died and was disgraced and being dragged around, etc. So then shortly after that, Tzidkiyahu died. So at least he got to see Nebuchadnezzar dying and being disgraced. That there was actually a nevuah that Yirmiyahu had told him that you're going to have that closer.
Oh, but they couldn't see, but he knew that.
But at least he knew what's going on.
He was attacked by who?
No, he knew. What do you mean? I mean, he knew. No, that was earlier. No, Hanessa just eventually, he got old and died. It's a whole story. I mean, I don't want to get too far into it because it's way off topic, but I'll just tell you briefly. Taka, there was that time when Hanessa went crazy and was like an animal for 7 years, etc. So during all that time, nobody knew what happened to him. And people, so they set up one of Hanessa's sons, Evel Meroidach, took the throne meanwhile. Eventually, Hanessa came back and he had that same son thrown into jail. How are you talking? You took over the throne without checking with me first. I mean, a paranoiac like Nebuchadnezzar, you can imagine. Anyway, when Nebuchadnezzar finally Taka did pay Gezich, when he finally dropped dead and Evel Meroidach Taka took the throne legitimately, everybody's afraid. You know, what do you mean? You're taking the throne again and we're going to be your advisors. It's going to be the same thing all over again. Your father's not really dead. He probably just went crazy again. And this time he's going to kill all of us. So Evel Meroidach actually had to take Nebuchadnezzar's body and schlep it all over the city of Babel to demonstrate to everybody, look, he really is dead. So, yeah. That's right. The Medrash mentions there's two different dates that it mentions in the Pasuk for when Nebuchadnezzar died. One is the 25th of Adar, one is the 27th of Adar. Why? Because the 25th is Taka when he died, 26th Evel Meroidach took the throne, and 27th is he took out Nebuchadnezzar's body out of his grave and dragged it around.
Maybe
it's
burden, but the main thing is
Okay. Anyway, so the bottom line is there are Mefarshim who say you see from the story because Sanhedrin was Matir Neder for Tzidkiyahu and Tzidkiyahu himself was Zachat Tzadik. Maybe Taka, you are allowed to be Matir Shalei B'fanav. On the other hand, others counter. On the other hand, look what the Gemara is telling us. The consequences of it, the very fact that the Gemara is telling the consequences shows that that's not right. That that was a mistake. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But even tzaddikim can make mistakes. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, "Rav Meir Omer, yesh dvarim shein kenolad ve'einan kenolad." There are certain things which are like, sort of like nolad, but they're not really nolad, and therefore you're able to use them as a basis for atarat hadarim. The Ein Chachamim loydim loy, but the Chachamim do not agree with him. Now, there is a Girsa over here, actually, that says the Chachamim loydim loy, that the Chachamim do agree with him. And that's and as a matter of fact, the Halacha is Paskin, like Rameir. In Rameir's example over here, the Halacha is Paskin, like him. So that has to be according to the Girsa, the Chachamim loydim loy, because otherwise the Halacha is usually not like Rameir. Okay, what are the examples? Ketzad, Om a konam shani noses plain. Suppose somebody says a konam that I won't marry so-and-so, this woman, shall be a rab, because her father is bad. Om reloi, mesa shal se tshuva. So they tell him the father is dead, or he did tshuva. So that's in a way like nolad, because we said before that somebody dying is an example of nolad. Also tshuva, also, I mean, okay, a person can always do tshuva, but it's kind of an unexpected thing. And yet, it's allowed. Or koinim l'bayis deshani nichnas sha'kelev rabasoichoi. Suppose somebody says, a koinim that I won't go into this house, because of that, there's a mean dog in it, or sha'nochash basoichoi, there's a snake in it. And they tell him the dog's dead or the snake got killed. So on the one hand, that's sort of like nolad because it's kind of unexpected, but yet it's not like nolad. You're able to use it as a basis for Ataras and Dari. Why? Because the difference is the nolad that we were talking about before. Well, first of all, Rabbi Yehuda Bechlal said poschen benolad. That you can always use nolad. But Chum disagreed with that. But the difference is poschen benolad is whether nolad or not is where you didn't mention the new circumstance as part of your neder. Like the first mission had said, you make a neder not to have enough from somebody, and later on he becomes the town sofer, so everybody needs him to write their documents and whatnot. You didn't mention that I'm making a neder from him because I don't need anything from him. You just mentioned I'm making a neder, I don't want to have enough from him because I don't like him. Later on, an unexpected thing happened and he became the sofer. Here you're actually mentioning the detail as part of your neder. Why am I making a neder not to marry this woman? Because her father's a horrible guy. Why am I making a neder not to go into this house? Because it's got a mean dog in it. That's the thing. So once the father dies or does tshuva or whatever, then the t'nai that the neder depends on is no longer in existence. The in chachamim moedim lo, but the chachamim don't agree with
it. A real nolad doesn't have conditions.
Right, basically. The in chachamim moedim lo, but the chachamim don't agree with him. Well, again, there's the gift of a chachamim moedim lo, but the chachamim do agree with him. So the Gemara asks, when the Mishnah said koinim shani nichnas levayisesh akela b'cholo mes nolad hu, I mean, on the face of it, if you're talking about that the father or the dog or whatever it is died, that is a classic case of nolad, as we said before. So why Taka would the mayor say that it's fine? The answer is, Amar Rapuna, Nafika Tola Nidra B'Dover. So Rapuna says, like we said in the Mishnah, because basically it's like he's making his neder depend on a circumstance. Why am I making this neder? Because of this and this. So if the because doesn't exist, neither does the neder. But Rabbi Yechanan and Amar Rabbi Yechanan says, no, that doesn't work. It's actually, it has to be Kvar Mes or Kvar Osa Truva, can't relate. No, it's not they're telling him, you made the neder on Sunday, and then on Monday the father died. No. You made the neder on Sunday, and already previously on Shabbos, the father had died. You didn't know about it yet. So when you made the neder on a chila, it was a neder based on a toast. So that would be, it's still sort of like nolad because you didn't know about it at the time. That's exactly the point. That ain't a nolad, but it's not nolad because it happened before you ever made the neder. Yeah. Masiv Rav Abba, so Rav Abba on Rav Yechanan. What are you telling me? You're telling me that it only works if the circumstance, if the tnai that you made the neder based on already didn't exist beforehand. The dog was already dead beforehand, for example. But we learn in the last Mishnah of the Perek tomorrow. Koinam she'ani noisim plonis ka'ura. Suppose somebody says koinam that I won't marry so and so the ugly girl, the hareina, and it turns out that she's not ugly, she's beautiful. Shchora, she says, I won't marry so-and-so who's dark, v'harei levona, and it turns out she's white. She's pale-skinned. Ksara, she's short, v'harei arucha, and she turns out to be tall. Mutaba, so then we say, mutu to marry her. So it's not, don't think that the case is that she was ugly and then she changed and she got plastic surgery or whatever and became beautiful, or she was dark and she became light-skinned, etc. Elashan neder toast. It's just, it's a neder based on toast, because at the time you thought that she's ugly and it turns out she's not. What's the point? Bishleim l'Rapuna, do I'm not to turn the nudu with ever? The point of Rapuna, who says that our Mishnah is talking about that it's not the original neder with a toast. It's rather you made your neder based on a condition, and the condition goes away afterwards, so therefore so does the neder. Fine, tana turn the nudu with ever, but tana neder toast. So fine, we can understand why we need two Mishnayos. One teaches us the concept of Tolan Nidrivadova, which is our Mishnah, and the other one, the last Mishnah, talks about neder toast, where it was a toast to begin with. Which, again, in terms of our Mishnah would be, for example, that he made a neder, I'm not going to marry her because her father is mean, and it turns out her father isn't mean by that point, so they read the tshuva. Elul Rav Yochanan Dama Klamet Zekvar Ota Truva Lomli Lomisni Trezim Hi Neder Toros. According to Rav Yochanan, that our Mishnah is also talking about a case of Toros, where the father had already done Shuvah or the dog already died or whatever. So what do we need to say twice about about Neder Toros? Kasha. Okay, so now a couple of things.
The kasha
is, and why, on the face of it, why is the Mishnah repeating itself? So one thing is, I mean, so Tosfos points out, what do you mean, why is the Mishnah repeating itself? We have a very good reason. In our Mishnah, we have the Meir versus the Chachamim. In the later Mishnah, we don't. In the later Mishnah, it's just a Stam Mishnah. So then, fine, we need it in order to have Stam Vachachach Machloikas, in order to have the usual rule. Machloikas Vachachach Stam. We need the usual rule that when you have a Machloikas Tanoim, and then in a later Mishnah in the same Masechta, you have a Stam Mishnah according to one opinion, then the halacha is like that opinion. So we need it for that reason alone. So one thing is, first of all, we mentioned the Girsa that says Vachachamim Moedim Loi, that the Chachamim do agree with him in our Mishnah. So in that case, so that Girsa fits very well with the Gemara's question. Then in that case, if the Chachamim are agreeing with the Meir in our Mishnah, what do we need a later Mishnah that essentially says the same thing? The other way of looking at it, though, which is what Tosfos says, is you're right. The Gemara is not necessarily asking why we, according to Rabbi Yochanan, why we need two Mishnayos, but rather, if they're both talking about basically the same case, why are they not together? Why do we have all these other Mishnayos in between that we're going to have today and tomorrow? If it's basically the same case, they should all be together.
And the answer is?
And the answer is Kasha. We Taka don't have a good answer. The Gemara Taka doesn't have a good answer to that. Then also the Ran points out like this. What's Taka the difference? That going back to, you know, in our Mishnah, according to Rav Huna's understanding, Rav Meir is saying that that even if at the time you made the neder, the mean father was still alive, only afterwards did he do tshuva, then you're saying the neder can still be bottled because of Hortum Mitzvah, not Hortum Mitzvah, because it's Kenola Nidri. So in that case, why Taka not? Why don't we say the same logic? If he makes the neder, I won't marry so-and-so, the ugly girl, and later on she became beautiful, she Taka went and then had plastic surgery, and why Taka shouldn't we say the same thing? Why Taka doesn't he say the same thing later on in that Mishnah?
Means
he hangs. I mean, he makes his neder depend on him. So the Ran gives two answers. Number one is, in our Mishnah, what are you saying? I won't marry her because her father is mean. Now, the Pashtus, he means only as long as there is that problem that her father is mean, am I not willing to marry her? But fine, it is common enough that a mean father can die or do tshuva. Therefore, the mayor figures, according to Rav Huna's understanding, that's not really considered such a total no. It's considered more that he's tola his neder, that he's making his neder depend on a side circumstance.
Because he was mean a long time ago.
Yeah. Probably. Whereas when it comes to, he says, I won't marry this woman who is ugly. An ugly woman usually doesn't become beautiful. So therefore, we can't assume that he had an exact with the father. We could assume that he had bedaita that one day the father will do tshuva or die, and then he'll be able to marry her. With an ugly woman or a short woman or whatever, it's unlikely to happen. So that's one answer that he brings from the Rashba. The other possibility is that let's look at the wording. What he said is she'eni noisa l'plonis ke'ura. He says, I won't marry so-and-so who is ugly. Meaning, he's not saying I won't marry her because she's ugly. If he did, then Taka, according to Rav Huna, or Meir, might indeed say that, yes, if she now becomes beautiful, then fine, it's Torah Nidra, and that's that. But no, he's saying so-and-so, the ugly one, it's like he's using it as a marker. Which woman am I not going to marry? Rivka, the ugly Rivka. As opposed to another Rivka out there who's beautiful, etc. So it's not Tolem Nidre at all. He's using that as an identifying marker. So therefore, you can't say if she becomes beautiful that cancels his neder, because he never made his neder dependent on that circumstance anyway. He just used it as a marker. Not I won't marry her because she's ugly, but I won't marry this ugly girl. There's a difference. So that's the second answer. No, it's not a question of whether it changes or not. The point is, according to that second answer, even if later on it changes, it doesn't matter. He never made that condition in the first place. It would be the equivalent of the first Mishnah in the Perek, where he makes a neder not to have enough from somebody, and later on that guy becomes a spoiler.
Okay, so
becomes a sofer, where we say he's still also chayav anokim. He can't use noilud as a basis for being matu neder on that. Because he never said to begin with, I'm making a neder that I won't have hanal from him because I don't need him as a sofer anyway. He just said I won't have hanal from this guy here by saying I won't marry this ugly girl. Perhaps again, not according to the second explanation in the Ran, not from Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Chisdai, is not because he's saying I won't marry her because she's ugly, but I won't marry this particular ugly girl. That's not a matter of tnai at all. Mishnah says, "V'odam Rav Meir." Rav Meir also says another din. And yesterday, the Rana talked about the fact. Usually, the Gemara mentions in Eruvin that usually the Mishnah will only use the word v'od if there was no interruption in between. If you have a Tana says something, and then in the next Mishnah he continues with another statement, then it can say v'od. But if there was an interruption, if there were other Mishnayos, other Tanoim talking in between, then that won't happen. So here all of a sudden we have Rav Meir saying something, the Chachamim interrupting and saying, we don't agree with you, or we do agree with you, as the case may be. Why the V'od? Again, the same reason as yesterday, because he's mentioning another Kula. When a Tana is mentioning another Kula, it's a strong thing that a Tana is able to come up with another Kula, therefore we can use V'od to it. Like the Mishnah uses it almost like an expression of approval, not approval really, not necessarily as halacha b'itim, but like look how far a mayor is going in his shita. Not only is matu this thing, but he even has the koyach to be matu this thing. So V'od amar Rav Meir. You can do a pesach for a person for a neder based on a pasuk in the Torah. For example, you can tell him, did you realize when you made this neder that you're not going to allow this person to have anah from you, for example? Did you realize that you're now being over on nekama and natira, taking revenge or holding a grudge, and hating your brother in your heart, and your brother should live with you, that you have a mitzvah to give him tzedakah, did you realize that he may end up becoming an ani and you won't be able to support him because of your neder? Omar, so now if he says, Taka, if I had realized that, I would not have made the neder, I raise a mutter, then he can be matter neder on that basis, says your mayor. So what's the difference, by the way? So first of all, we said in the first Mishnah of the Perek that you can't be preseach the chvod ha-mokrim. You can't use the honor of the Eivishter. You can't say if you knew that you were dishonoring the Eivishter by making this neder, you can't use that as a basis for a neder. So how are we using over here, on the other hand, a mitzvah? And for that matter, there's a question that Ran points out. Earlier in the Masechta, we had, the Gemara had mentioned several statements that you can't use as a basis for being matu neder. One of them is, for example, pointing out to a person what a serious avera it is in the first place to make a neder. So how is it different over here? Basically, the answer is because when you use kvod ha-mokrim, the average person does not have the chutzpah to say that, yes, I would have made this neder knowing that it's dishonoring the Eivishter.
Even if he has no respect for his parents.
Parents are different. I mean, parents, you know, Hishva Lechvayd Namokam, but still, yeah, a person might not have honor for his parents, but still, he wouldn't have the break type to say, yes, I would have made this neder knowing that I'm dishonoring the Eivishter. But Pashtus, he would say that, no, I didn't realize that. And then you don't, like the Gemara had said yesterday. Mashenke, and by the same token, when it comes to those serious things that the Gemara had mentioned before, and on Daf Chafez, what a serious issue it is in the first place to make a neder, that a person deserves to be run through with a sword, etc. Those are serious things like that. A person might falsely say, yes, I wouldn't have made the neder on that basis when really he might have. Mashenke, our Mishnah is talking about specific mitzvahs. So so the vote is, you know, the Altareba points out in Tanya, the Altareba has a long discussion in Perek Yudches, Yudches Kof of Tanya, that, you know, even a Kal Shabakalim is not, you know, you give him a choice, you know, bow down to this idol or go on Mesiris Nefesh. Why? Because he knows that separates him from Eivishter. So how is it every Aveda separates a person to a certain extent from the Eivishter? How is it a Yid does any Aveda? Because it was a Ruach Shtus. The person fools himself into thinking, you know what, it's a small Aveda, it's not that important, it doesn't really affect my connection with the Eivishter. Here we see that actual difference, that a person might well have the break type to say, yes, I would have made this neder even knowing that it prevents me from giving tzedakah or doing avos yisrael or whatever. So therefore, if Hitaka says, I would not have made the neder in that case, we can take him at his word. Mashenkin, a person would not have the break type to say that I would not have the chutzpah to say that I would have done it knowing that I'm dishonoring the Eivishter. So that's the difference. So a person, if you ask a person, would you have made this neder if you knew that you're dishonoring the Eivishter, a normal person, a normal yid would never answer no, would never have answered yes, I would have made the neder anyway. But you ask him, would you have done it if you knew it prevents you from Avos Yisrael? Some people will say yes, some people will say not. People have that ruach shnus where they think that a small shaveira like that is not a big thing. So therefore, if he says no, I wouldn't have, then Taka, you can take him at his word. This is not just an Erev Rosh Hashanah, we're talking about all year round. Okay, so Amalei Rav Huna Bar Ketina L'Rabbanan. So Rav Huna Bar Ketina asked the Rabbanan, around the side of it here it says a girsa that he asked Rav Chana. You're telling me that what's going on? You're taking this person is coming to Beis Din, and Beis Din is telling him, did you realize that by making this neder, you're preventing yourself from giving tzedakah to this person? So, Neima, let him answer back. What do I care? Call them Ani Lava Lai Nafil. Why? Whoever becomes poor doesn't necessarily fall on me. My demati li lefarnas sebahadi kolam lefarnas alai. Fine, I have to give tzedakah for all the poor people in the city. I have my fair share to give. Fine, I'll give that to the gabbai tzedakah. In other words, and you know, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we had cases where one person is mudu hanam chavera, and we had cases where you can support him through a third party. You can say kolazon ene mafsid, you know, whoever supports him won't lose out. You can say, oh, actually, we said you couldn't say that. We said you can tell a storekeeper, so and so is mudu hanam for me. What am I supposed to do? And the storekeeper gives him, and later on you reimburse him, etc. So by the same logic here. The person who made the neder, the other person is not allowed to have anah from him. He could, if the chachamim tell him, if the beis din tells him, you know, did you realize that's going to prevent you from giving tzedakah? Why? That doesn't prevent me from giving tzedakah to him. I give to the general tzedakah fund. The fact that from that tzedakah fund it ends up going to him, that's not considered a direct anah from me. That's perfectly mutter. So how is that any kind of pesach? How is that preventing me from doing the mitzvah of tzedakah that I should have been doing? The Rosh says a little bit differently. That might not be good enough. Specifically, what would have to happen, fine, is the person could still argue, fine, this person is not allowed to have hanah for me, so I will have to tell the Gabbai Tzedakah, all it is fine, I'll tell the Gabbai Tzedakah, whatever money comes from me, don't give to him. Give it to other aniyim. You'll have other money, your money is fungible, you'll have other money in the Tzedakah fund that you can give to him.
Give them the money, but don't tell it's from me.
No, but that doesn't work.
It won't give him enough.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter, no, because it's still coming from you. Okay. Amalei, so the Rabbanan, or Rabbon, or Rabchana, or Rabba, whoever it is, answers, Ani Omer, you know what, I say, Kol Noifel, and in Noifel, with the Gabbai Tchila, when a person falls to have to give, to have to receive tzedakah, he doesn't first go to the under the hands of the Gabbai tzedakah. A person first starts out asking from his friends, or from his neighbors, or relatives, or whatever. So, yes, it's true. Eventually, the person may fall even to the point where he has to collect tzedakah from the general fund, and at that point, taka, you won't be over on your neder. But the chachamim comes to the beis din and can still tell the person, you know what, during that earlier stage, if this person starts becoming poor, your taka is going to have a responsibility to support him, because you don't start out by having the person go collect from the general tzedakah fund. So at that point, you'll be over on v'cheyach isha imach, I'm supporting him with tzedakah. And then they can use that as a pesach. Mishnah says, "Poskim the odav ksuba kisa." Another thing you can use for a Pesach is that it'll involve paying his wife's suba. If he makes a neder, for example, that his wife can't have enough from him, or the other way around, he can't have enough from his wife, which is going to trigger that he's going to have to divorce her and pay her suba. You can use that as a basis for being mafid the neder. So indeed, there was a case where somebody made a neder not to have anah from his wife, which we learned earlier in the Masechta that, among other things, that prevents him from having relations with her, because necessarily he'll have anah. So therefore, well, if he's not going to have relations with her anymore, then that's grounds for divorce. Her ksuba was twice the usual amount. Instead of 200 zuz, as we learned in ksubas, it was 400.
Outcomes for 400,
yeah. when a couple gets married, the husband, I mean, we have it in our Ksubas nowadays also. There's a certain fixed amount that the Chachamim require that a man has to write out in the Ksuba for his wife, 200 if she's a psula, 100 otherwise. But then there's also, we write in our present-day Ksuba, so Tzvi, so-and-so, Chassan Danan, the Chassan agreed on his own. But Hoistik, maybe delay, oh, it's Masayim Skukim Keset Sodaf. And on his own, he added another 200 Skukim of pure silver. Yeah, we talked about it many times in Ksubas, yeah. Yeah, there's Ikh Ksuba and there's Tosfos. There's the basic amount that the Chachamim set up, and then there's the additional amount that you required. Okay, so in this case, the total amount came to 400. Uval Difnei Rav Akiva, so he came to Rav Akiva V'chiva, listen, Lach Ksuba. So Rav Akiva said, look, you're going to have to divorce her, but then you're going to have to pay her Ksuba. Amalai Rebbe, so the man says, Rebbe, listen, Chesmei is Dinurin Hiniach Abba. My father left over an estate worth 800 Dinurin. So my brother got 400 of it. I got 400. There was apparently no bechor over here. Lo daya shetitah lahim asayim ani asayim. Wouldn't it be enough if I give her 200 and I keep the other 200? Out of my whole estate now is only worth 400. Should I have to pay everything that I have for ksuba? Amalei Rav Akiva, so Rav Akiva tells him, yeah, I feel at the moichah sa'ar roshcha, yeah, even if you have to sell the hair on your head. And maybe Rav Akiva used that expression because he remembered how Rachel had to sell her hair to raise money for them while he was away learning. Anyway, at the noise and lux of Lassa, yeah, you're going to pay her ksuba, no matter what. Amalei, so the man says, either way, you see a dash who can. You know, if I'd realized that this nether is going to lead to that, well, you see no nether, I never would have made the nether in the first place. Oh, he teared Rav Akiva, and Rav Akiva was able to mask the nether on that basis. That's an example of post-Kanadabuksubasishte. That you can use as a Pesach, the very fact that you realize what a huge financial burden it's going to be on you to pay the Ksuba. Okay, I don't.
If the woman, they're not going to give for the Ksuba, at least 200 zuz, what's supposed to be?
Without 200 zuz, you're not allowed to get married, period. If you don't write a Ksuba, if you write a Ksuba for less than 200 zuz, that's called bealessness. But you're allowed to add more, whatever.
And
what? You know, okay, he was not to the wife, to the husband. Yeah. Okay.
Here he volunteered. He wasn't asked, if that happened, would you have done that?
But that's a Pesach. The Pesach doesn't have to be that the Chacham finds the Pesach. It can be the person himself finds the Pesach, but you still, the Chacham then uses that as a basis. Okay, on that basis, yeah.
No, I understand that, but it seems much more legitimate in this case.
Okay.
Well, he's not suggested anything, and then he says, if I'd known.
I mean, the previous mission also, it's at Ilu Yisir Deyashu Kain, if I'd known, if I'd realized that this is going to prevent me from giving tzedakah, et cetera. Yeah. Okay. Now, we have a basic question in our Mishnah. What is the man saying that I can't afford paying the whole 400 zuz, that's going to be my entire fortune, and Rabbi Akiva tells him in that case, doesn't matter, even the hair on your head. What do you mean the hair on your head? The hair on your head is metalplin. Metalpili means shtabi de l'ksuba, or metalpili b'chlal under a shibud to l'ksuba. So we had a discussion about this in Ksubas, we had a machloikas, the mayor and the chachamim about it. So we learned over there that when it comes to a regular chayv, there's no question, it's only on karka, not metalpili. But when it comes to ksuba, we had a machloikas between the mayor and the chachamim. The mayor said you can collect equally well from metalpili, and the chachamim said not. I don't know the difference. What happens if you're collecting from the air? Anyway, that's not really relevant over here. But the point is, metalpilin, according to Chachamim, metalpilin are not under the shibud to the ksuba. Only karka is. So what is Rabbi Akiva telling him? You'd even have to sell the hair on your head. I wouldn't have to sell the hair on my head. No, that you pay from karka. That's the thing. Well, he says chesmei es dinur and hiniach abba. He means, according to that, it would mean that he means. Fine, that you could say means 800 zuz worth of land. But sa'ar roshcha is no question is metalpilin. Omer Abaya, no, that's the thing. Kalka shavach. No, so that okay, right. So that's the right. So the Gemara's first question is not based on the hair. The Gemara's first question is based on the fact that he had said that my father left us 800 dinurim, which the Gemara assumes that 800 dinurim means cash. So then, if it's cash, it's not meshubah to the ksuba anyway. I'm going to buy a kauka shava chesmeis dinner. No, it means there was kauka worth 800 dinner. Okay, v'achatani sarosh. Show you sarosh and metalpili. We'll find it. It also says that Rabbi Akiva tells him the hair on your head is going to be metal. Is going to be meshubah to it, and that's metalpilin. No. What he means is hachikama. Afilu atam moichu sarosh chavo oichu. No, what Rabbi Akiva means to tell him is like this. You give her the whole 400 zuz out of karka. Yes, only the karka is undistributed to the ksuba, like the chachamim say, against your mayor. But at that point, you're going to be left without anything. Fine, at that point, you have to get money for food for yourself to eat. If at that point you're reduced to cutting off your hair and selling it, that's what you'll have to do.
Still owes the debt?
No. He paid the debt. He paid the 400, but he has to eat. So Rav Akiva is telling him, even if you're left with nothing after you pay your ex-wife, your ksuba, you're still, if it takes selling your hair, that's what you're going to have to do. But now, for himself to be able to raise money. Ooh, yeah.
Isn't that
no, not to pay the ksuba. The ksuba's paid at that point.
Isn't that obvious?
Maybe it's not so obvious. Shamat minei ein mesadrin lebal chayv. Does that mean then that we do not set up an arrangement for bal chayv? Now, the Torah tells us like this. We know there's the concept of erchin. We've discussed it here and there. That a person makes a promise and says, I'm going to give my erech or the erech of so and so to the Beis Mikdash. Then he owes the Beis Mikdash a certain amount of money according to the table or parshas b'chol kodesh, depending on the person's age and gender. What happens if he can't afford that whole amount? So he promised to give, for example, his own erech, which let's say is 50 shekels. He doesn't have that much.
Erech is his value.
It's sort of the value of his neshama, so to speak. It's a fixed value. It doesn't depend on his value on the slave market. That's from him. Erech is a fixed. You look up the table over there. If he's a man between 20 and 60, it's 50 shekel. If he's a woman between 20 and 60, it's 30 shekel, etc. It's a whole list over there. So what if he doesn't have all that? What if he doesn't have that much money? So then what they do is the Kohenim go and figure out the value of everything that he owns. They subtract from that certain basic necessities that he's going to need, clothes for a certain period of time, food for a certain period of time, stuff that he needs, tools that he needs for his job, etc. Once they subtract all of that, everything else is taken by Hekdesh to pay off the Erech, and that's it. Then the din is, as long as it was at least one shekel, then that's it. He's parted from the rest. This is called Mesadrin. So the Pasuk describes over there. The Machu Merkecha, if he's too poor to give the Erech, then the Kohen starts evaluating his value. Now, the Gemara discusses it. The Gemara discusses in Erchein and Bava Metzia, does the same rule apply to a Baal Chayv? Does the same rule apply if one person owes another person money? So there is an opinion that says, yes, the same kind of thing we do for Erchein, the same kind of thing we do for a Baal Chayv, because we learn Zeta Shava, Micha Micha. By Erchein it says, V'imachu Me'erkecha, by Baal Chayv. It also uses a Lashon V'chiyom V'chachicha. So therefore, there's a comparison, and therefore you do the same kind of sidur the Baal Chayv. You figure out, you subtract the value of the certain basic necessities that he needs, everything else goes to the Baal Chayv. Then there's an opinion that says that, no, you don't do that. You just take everything. That's what it takes to pay off the debt, and that's what you do. From the way we just understood Rabbi Akiva, that we're telling the man, you're going to give that whole 400 zuz to your ex-wife to pay her ksuba, and then all you're going to have left of value is going to be your hair, and you'll have to sell that. That means that ain't Masadr in the Baal Chayv. So how does that fit according to the opinion of Masadr in the Baal Chayv, which is in fact the halacha? I'm Rav Nachman Mitzchak. No, loy mashen makaren shtar ksuba. No, all Rabbi Akiva means to say is, fine, we are going to be Masadr in the Baal Chayv. We are going to be arranging, we're going to have to leave you a certain amount to live off of, so therefore, Taka, we're not going to take that whole 400 zuz of karka and give it to for the ksuba, because we have to subtract from that what you need for food and clothes, or what you need for food for 30 days and clothes for 12 months, etc. But don't think once we've done that, that it's going to be like Erchin, and then at that point the rest of the debt is wiped out. Which, again, by Erchin, that would be the rule. The person owes 50 shkalim to the Mesmithish for his Erech, for example, and his whole net worth, minus the Masadr and the Baal Chayv, comes out to 30, then the rest of the, he doesn't have to pay the rest. Don't think it's that case over here. Don't think we're going to rip up the Ksuba and say you don't owe the rest. The rest of it is still going to be an obligation on you. So even if there may come a point when you have to sell the hair on your head in order to raise money for food for yourself, because you burnt through the remaining money that we left for you for the Masadr and the Baal Chayv, and now all you have is your hair, you're still going to have to do that, and you're still going to have to, any nechasim that you get are still going to be on the hook for the ksuba until you pay off the whole thing. That's the Kamash Malan.